You are listening to The Edge, a podcast for personal development junkies and visionaries living right at the precipice of oh shit meets fuck yeah. I'm Nadia Munda, an embodiment and relationship coach and a lover of all edges. Stick around to listen to raw, unpolished conversations where we explore our personal and collective edges in all their erotic glory.
It is definitely feeling the day 26 vibes over here. So I'm glad I have this second cup of coffee.
And you have me at day 14. So we're in a good pairing.
We balance each other out, which tends to happen.
It's true,
I think. So sitting here with Ginny Muir. Ginny is currently my roommate. Which is so delightful. And at the same time, Ginny and I have been friends since, we almost forget the year.
8 or 9 years now.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And we're sitting around our kitchen table.
Drinking a Nadia special, which is a very special coffee drink that she makes at home. And it tastes like it comes from a gourmet coffee shop.
I charge $5 and 30 cents.
You could. I'd pay it.
If milk frother, I swear, is like the best investment. If someone asks me, like, is it a coach? Is it? Nope. Milk frother gives me delightful mornings. Okay. Well, we're here today to just talk about essentially walking the path of truth. And this is something that, you know, Ginny and I on walks and sitting around the kitchen table here have talked about a lot, and we thought it would be really awesome to come on and share some of the things that have come up for us in these conversations. Obviously, it's a little less organic when we have a microphone staring at us, but we'll see where we go today around this piece. But I think it's really important for us to talk about it, because we often see the path of truth, I think, just like portrayed a certain way online, right? We get the really beautiful, shiny, glossy, glittery side of it. And there is a beautiful side of it. And sometimes people leave out the snot. And I feel like Ginny and I have been in many occasions where there's been snot.
Yes, so many.
And vomit and just all the things that happen.
Night terrors.
In official ceremony and in unofficial ceremony, I would say. So, you know, what I was thinking about the other day, and I shared this with Ginny, and I feel like this is sort of a place for us to start, and it really brought me to tears, was how life always somehow nudges you in the direction of your path of truth, even when you've sort of taken the scenic route, and you're like, whoopsies, I took, you know, as a human, I made this decision, and somehow I ended up on this, you know, other path, and yet life somehow nudges you back. And the way that happened for Ginny and I is that I realized the other day, we have met initially through Nisha Moodley, who was both of our coach.
Hi, Nisha.
Both of our coaches.
She coached both of us.
Yes, I'm trying to use the grammar right. Anyways, she was our coach. But in on different years. Like, so she runs this beautiful mastermind, which she's still running. And I had wanted to, my intuition had wanted to do it a certain year that Ginny was in it.
2013.
Got it. And I just happened to have made a decision that was actually not in alignment with my truth due to a relationship I was in. So I was a little bit affected by that. And I ended up coming back to that truth a year later. And what's interesting is I just feel like Ginny and I were destined to meet. And initially my nudge was to join her year, but then it just happened in a different way, but it still happened.
It still happened.
And that was really beautiful. So I think the path of truth is sort of inevitable, basically, if you've dedicated your life to it.
If you're living in a certain way, right? And I think that is what we're here to talk about on a level. there is a way that you could go through life as a human in these current times only operating on programming, basically on what you've been told to do, the life treadmill that you've been told to get on, and you just keep pushing the up button and you keep running faster and faster in a line that's not actually set or decided by you. And that would be really easy to do at this time on a level, but you would have to numb out if you're someone who is sensitive and feely and tracking what's happening on the planet in the way that Nadia and I are, and probably many of you are. There's something inside you that you would have to turn off in order to continue doing that. And believe me, I tried. I gave it my best shot. And then eventually, if you are someone who's like, this soul calling to do a human life in a different way, to live not numbed out, it becomes so big that it itches and scratches from the inside out and gives you no choice eventually but to listen. If you are someone who's like, okay, I'm going to turn up the dial on this rather than do all the things that one could do in this day and age to make it be quiet or hope it goes away.
Yeah. The other thing that, you know, strikes me a lot is how we're all, there's such a universality to our deprogramming and our choice of walking the path of truth. Like Ginny, you know, grew up in Georgia, you know, and I grew up in Beirut, Lebanon. I mean, it's just like couldn't be two opposite upbringings. Mm-hmm. And yet everything that we're peeling off is quite similar, yes, if not identical. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, as women, but even just as humans, there is such a universality, no matter what the details of the circumstances, what the trauma is, what the story was around, this is what it means to be a successful person. This is what it means to be a person of credibility, of integrity, of, you know, the mainstream version of truth. And then there's just our quirky little selves. Mm-hmm. That are just struggling and figuring it out and also beautifully expanding in other moments and just sort of riding the wave of opening and closing and tripping and walking gracefully and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it's being willing to choose that truth. I was thinking about when we were talking about this topic, I was thinking, like, when did you first deviate from the path of truth? Mm. And I remember being a really little girl and learning how to lie, because the way that I actually was and my true desires and how I wanted to be and how I wanted to show up was very clearly not acceptable or pleasing. And there's this deep drive in all of us to get love and to get approval. And so even if we're naturally wild ones and free ones who don't want to do the things, like from an early age, I didn't want to put on shoes ever. You know, I just wanted to be outside with the trees. But you learn to pretend that that's not your truth and to have over time this schism develop. For me, this was how it looked, was I often felt I was living a double life. There was the me that was inside becoming increasingly dim, but often coming out sideways in displays of wildness or self-destruction or whatever. And then there was the, this is how I look on the outside, what I've learned to craft in order to get love and acceptance and approval from the systems and structures that be. And like you said, we both grew up in very different ones, but growing up in the conservative American South, which was highly patriarchal, highly racist, highly misogynistic, just by the water you were swimming in. You know, it was like, okay, I have to kind of adjust to this cultural programming and be tiny and smiley and pleasing in order to get love, which is a deep desire. But there's this whole other thing in me that knows that's not actually my truth. Mm. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's this schism that happens, and then at some point there has to be a decision to honor the internal place as opposed to needing love from the systems that be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, same thing, you know, Beirut, definitely patriarchal, misogynistic, racist, Muslim. So that piece is different, but still religious, like, mores, right? Like, this is what you do and this is what you don't. Make sure, you know, your skirt is this long and closing your legs and da-da-da and all that stuff. And now I literally teach lap dancing. You know, that's, I think that's the path of truth. But what I want to talk about is like, okay, let's talk about what we don't see on Instagram. I mean, now we've become a bit better about being more vulnerable and sharing some of the gnarly shit. At least us, we hope to do that and we try to do that to the extent we can. But there's like, you know, everyone may look on the outside and look at, you know, people like us and be like, oh, okay, they transitioned and like they did it and they were, you know, they set themselves free and blah, blah, blah. And it's like every time I go to post, I mean, literally just the other day posting a reel with a bunch of women scantily clad is like a big edge for me still for my family, for my father, for me, my inner critic. Or my inner Muslim, I don't know. There's my inner something that goes, is this a little much? There's butt cheeks here. And it is, it's a constant, I don't think battle is the word. It's like, it's devotion, actually. Yeah. It's like devotion to truth over and over again, even when you're scraping your knees along the way, even when you're upsetting people along the way, people you love tremendously, even when you're not getting the feedback, or this has been a big one for me, the recognition or feedback or sort of response that you would like to get. Like, hello, see me, look at me, I broke through, you know? Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, da-da-da, watching a cat video. which I do too.
Well, like you're saying, it's a practice. And like any practice, it actually requires you to show up to it every single day. So I wouldn't say there's ever a day that goes by that's just pure, oh, this is easy. It's easy to live in this different way. At least once every single day, I bump up against some edge, internal or external, that I'm like, take a deep breath. You can do it. Remember who you are. Feel for your truth. And make a choice that is a little cringy sometimes. And some days that's just little things. And then some days you're unraveling an entire identity piece. And it can look like, I can't get up off the bathroom floor because I'm feeling this somatically, actually in my body and in the depths of my emotional body and in my spirit, like an exorcism. And wow, that's dramatic, but it's actually the experience some days.
Yeah, Ginny and I are pretty dramatic in our transformation. I remember, do you remember like somewhere earlier in the winter, I was like, oh, look at me. I'm transforming so easily this time around. This ego death feels so light. And then shit hit the fan so hard.
Yeah. And we do get these little grace periods. I'm in a bit of one right now. Knock on wood. But that's coming out on the other side of like a 3-month ringer, being put through the ringer, and learning as where we are now that being put through the ringer doesn't actually mean you stop showing up for life. We're still holding all the things we're holding, you know? And I think that's, we don't get to just go to an ashram and be like, let me die an ego death while someone's making me lunch. You know, it's like we're holding our businesses. We're holding this home that we care for. We're holding community. We're holding relationships. We're holding a dog. You know, these things that you really do have to keep showing up to. All of our bills, like no one's paying that for us.
And clients, right? Like, I mean, there's our business, like the day-to-day management, but then there, and you know, send out an email, do the thing. But then there's also like the reality and the energetics of our every single client we're working with, which is like, whew, a village.
Yeah.
So and we're holding the village too, which is something I want to talk about a little bit because I feel is really, really important in just your reality and now a little bit mine. Mm-hmm. So in business, we are starting to see a few people in our industry here and there, they're sprinkled in, really showing up vulnerably and speaking to choosing truth when it's not convenient.
Yeah.
When it doesn't fit into the 10-year plan, when it may rearrange your entire life, but there being this true dedication and devotion to the path of truth. And I'm curious for you, when you look back so far, what do you feel was one of the most difficult choices that you had to make where you had to go, all right, this is not going to be fun, mm-hmm. but this is the path of truth and I'm devoted to it no matter what.
There are a couple that come to mind. Well, the first I would say was leaving my marriage. And I was in a marriage for 8 years, together for 10 years. When you met me, I was in the process of leaving that marriage. And it was actually beautiful and comfortable in many ways. And there was nothing, from the outside, everyone was like, wow, they are great together. They give a mean dinner party. Mm-hmm. And they've got this cute dog and this sweet little house. And I was slowly dying inside of that dynamic. And to wrestle myself free, to be really honest about the extent to which I was dying, was the bravest thing I'd had to do up until that point. And I was already running my own business at that point. So I was maybe 5 years into being a coach. And at that point, had just talked about the things that I knew in coaching, health and nutrition and hormonal balancing. And I kept it really, really concrete and physical. And I was a great health coach. And then I started to see that no matter what I was doing, even though I knew all the things to do, my body entered another phase of rebellion and of not letting me get away with pretending like I was healthy. And what I had to choose was there was an expansion beyond where I could go inside of that partnership. So that's the first one that comes to mind. And then on the other side of that, it was like I got this like moment of freedom. Like I did it. I did the thing. And this is what they kind of don't show you. It's like you break free and then you actually, for me in that experience, and I've begun to see the cycle, you make the hard decision and that's not actually the thing that fully sets you free. Then you have to go through the death. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was like I got this like few month spurt of like I'm free and I'm alive and I'm living life on my own terms, and then it was like everything came crashing down and I had to really sit in that cave and really watch my business kind of contract. Everything contracted. My business contracted, my life contracted. It had to get really small so that part could fully complete and fully die. And we sometimes try and skip over the full completion, but my soul is not going to let me do that. So I had to really die for longer than was comfortable. Mm. Like I wanted it to be a week-long process and it was like a 2-year process. And I was still working to an extent during this time, but everything was just way shrunken down. And it was an actual experience of dying. Mm. So that's the first one that comes to mind. What about you?
Well, I mean, for people, I'm curious, like, just maybe we can elaborate when you say death.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what people, because you and I feel like we're like, oh, we're having a, you know, we're going through a death process. You know, maybe some people are like, what, but can you, like, clarify?
Okay, yes, let me tell you. So in general, nature, you'll see this again and again and again if you look at life around us, has three stages of being. There's creation. There's maintenance and there's destruction. And the destruction could also be seen as the removal of anything that's unnecessary or irrelevant. That's basically what destruction is. It's like removing the irrelevant. And we can't go through the next creation cycle until what is irrelevant has been removed. So the only way to do that is to destroy it, to actually fully have it release, die, burn up, compost, whatever the flavor of destruction. So this also happens in our lives. And in a very simple life, I guess that could just be one full cycle, right? You're born, you maintain that one ego identity, and then you die.
That's cute. Not us. That's not what we signed up for.
In my life, there's been at least 18 of those cycles where there's this surge of creation. I almost create a part, an identity for myself, a phase of life, a chapter, a body of work, a relationship, whatever it is. And I maintain it for as long as it's true. And then because I can't get away with not being true, when it becomes actually irrelevant, stagnant, no longer alive, I go through a phase of destruction. And that usually can, it's as we learn to die gracefully, I think it becomes less intense. But in the early phases, a lot of times there's resistance to that destruction. So it looks like life doing it for you. Mm-hmm. If you don't walk willingly into the fire, you will get burned, struck by lightning, something, if this is your way of being.
It's like me trying to get to Peru.
Right.
So I like to resist the death process. Uh-huh. As you were talking, I was thinking, what a great book or like course name, like The Art of Dying Gracefully.
Yeah.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Coming soon, guys. It is such an art form, and it's one that I may actually physically die trying to learn how to do. Because I'm so resistant to it. My mind is so stubborn with like, no, this is the plan. This is what we're doing. This is how we're going. This is the relationship that should work out. This is the program that's going to be my eternal signature, you know, Marie Forleo B-School program. Like, it's happening. And I just go into that, and I'm a little too definitely getting better, but I'm a little bit too stubborn and try to stick to the plan. And so life is like, okay. And then I just start getting slapped around pretty hard with all sorts of weird, bizarre things that happen in order for me to actually look at what's true.
Yeah, it'll be like you try and go forward direction and you just get blocked from going forward. Mm-hmm. And there was a death cycle that I think is actually so funny now looking back on it, that was my most obvious, hilarious from the outside, the fact that life was really trying to give me some warnings that I needed to go into a death, and I was just blasting full steam through them. This was in the time after my divorce. I needed to grieve. I needed to actually die. I needed the identity that was that woman that was married and lived in Washington, D.C. and gave dinner parties and was supported by her husband a lot and all these things. I needed her to actually die. But instead of going willingly into that, I sort of blasted out of that marriage like I was shot out of a cannon and went into this phase of moving fast and partying and dating like crazy and really just like going for it with life. And a couple months on the other side of the divorce being final, I was traveling around, driving up and down the East Coast a lot. And in 3 months, no, maybe it was even 2 months, I got 5 speeding tickets.
So literal.
So literal. Like, slow down, girl, actually. And they were in ridiculous scenarios. Like, I would get a speeding ticket for going like 3 miles over the speed limit, which no one does. But it was life just trying to slow me down. And I just didn't listen, and I didn't listen, and I was going, going, going. And then that few months later, that spring, I was skiing, which is something I love to do. And I've never had an injury. I've been skiing since I was little. I'm a skillful skier. And in this like fluke moment, I fell and tore my ACL and had a major knee injury.
I remember that.
And woo, you know me, I'm a mover. But it was like life sat me down and was like, okay, sit still, go into this cave where you cannot move. You're in your parents' house because I needed someone to help me take care of my dog because I couldn't walk my dog. And you're going to sit still in your childhood bedroom and feel what's here. And it was so gnarly. And I'm wondering, like, as I look back on it, like, could I have done that more gracefully? Could I have not had to be pushed down a mountain by whatever forces pushed me down? But then I look back at it and it's like, there's love to it. It wasn't, life was not going to let me get away with not feeling what needed to be felt. And it was like, life knew I had the capacity to do that. It just had to create the conditions where it was impossible for me to do anything else.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, you know, we've been talking a lot about sort of past deaths or past edges. I'm curious for you right now, in this year, in this season, what feels like, what's the edge that you're really exploring around walking the path of truth right now?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's how to be in service in this world in a way that is truly in alignment with my deepest values. I am here to serve the feminine, actually. Not the distorted human feminine, but the deep, true, energetic of love and creativity and inclusivity that is like the earth. And how do I show up and help and support and guide others through doing a similar thing in a way that is not at all extractive? And it's a constant threading of the needle, because in our industry, we're seeing this moment where people are just really advocating for the making of more and more and more money. And you see a lot of coaches coaching coaches to make money, coaching coaches to make money. And I just get curious about how that's actually serving the energetic of the feminine on our planet. And so can I be willing to support myself in this work, be prosperous in a way that's truly in integrity and is actually like, it is our, is what I'm charging and the work that I'm bringing through all in alignment. And it's just an edge to feel into, to be, to not, it's so easy to fall into like, oh, this person's charging this. Like, I've been doing this work for 12 years. I've studied and studied and studied. I've sat at the feet of shamans. I've literally like, I'm always learning and growing and gaining wisdom. How come I'm charging one fifth of that? Mm-hmm. But actually it's because it's true. For me, and I'm just feeling for that, because you and I are both in phases of, I can feel at this time in my life, I'm in my 40s and I'm in the phase of my life where I'm really guided to bring through my work. You know, it's not about me anymore. It's about how do I show up and serve. That's where I actually find satisfaction and fulfillment. It's not just like I'm supposed to. That's, I can feel that's the truth of my soul. I'm supposed to be showing up and helping, you know. And how do I do that in a way that's truly helpful?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so easy right now to sort of dangle the shiny object right in front of people and be like, oh, I help people, coaches, etc., entrepreneurs, like, make X number of dollars a month. Like, look at my last client who made X number of dollars a month. And there's so much focus on that. And, you know, there's obviously a really beautiful side to it, right? Mm-hmm. The financial freedom, especially for women.
Yeah.
When we think back to, oh my God, it hasn't been that many years since women had to like bring along their husbands to open a bank account. Like, there's been so much expansion in that area. But it's nearly as though we're going right back into the trap that the men got stuck in.
Yes.
Right? Where we're like, okay, make more money, make it, get it, happiness is at the end of this road. You know, once you make 100K a month, you're going to be happy. And I think there's also another group of leaders that are showing up that, but they're showing up more slowly because I think it's more organic growth, maybe. Where we're going, okay, yes, we want financial freedom. We want to expand. We want to grow. We want more money in the hands of women because we know that that's going to spread wealth in a better way. And we're not willing to, you know, give up on or sacrifice our friendships, our romantic partnerships, the community we live in, the ecosystem that we are a part of, and really honoring the importance of our part in the sustainability piece around that. And what else? I'm trying to think. I feel like there's another piece.
Yeah, well, it's just the other piece that is present for me always is to what end? You know, I absolutely think that our work, we're doing really beautiful, I feel, laying that path of, you said, slow organic growth, where we once again value the healing arts, the real true wisdom keepers, where we don't, you know, pay our elders $100 for a week of learning from them, you know, like that's, I want to undo that. So I want to become an elder who actually feels supported by my community as I continue to gain wisdom, because that's what I'm here to do. But so it's balancing that with, but if we just need to make millions and millions and millions, to what end? For what? So that we can buy more things to extract from our home planet, as opposed to just having the resources to relax our nervous systems enough into safety so that we continue to be generative on this planet. And that's the thread I'm always tracking. That's why it feels like an edge currently, because it's new. We haven't done this in a long time. How do we support and honor and value the healers without falling into that, exactly like you said, existing system of just chasing more, 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 so that we don't sacrifice the time that we want to spend continuing to become wise, continuing to practice, continuing to sit still in nature. These things that technically, if you're just charging for your time, no one's paying you to do, but can we actually be supported in those practices without sacrificing them?
Yeah, there's something interesting that just popped up for me as you were talking, which is like we currently are, our values are a little upside down in that we have such reverence and I don't even know if reverence is the right word, but like there's a worshiping of influencers, of YouTubers, of, you know, all these people who often are young because they know how to work technology better. And so there's this sort of like bowing down of the collective to these people, like, ooh, look, this person has 2 million followers. This person, you know, is constantly producing reels and TikToks and whatever. And there's very little attention put to and reverence put to the elders. And it's even like, especially in the Western world, it's like, where are the elders? Mm-hmm. Where are they? You know, because our entire reality these days for most of us is on Instagram or wherever, somewhere on a social media platform, and the elders aren't there. Mm-hmm. So we nearly just, they don't exist, which is such a problem.
Yeah.
Because they are the ones who've walked the path of truth and come, you know, and they have the battle wounds and the stories to tell and the wisdom to offer. And instead we're watching a 21-year-old, like, you know, lip syncing and dancing. And oh God, it's just, it really hurts my heart. Like I get, there's pain in my chest when I think about that. And not because there isn't something, I mean, the 21-year-old who's dancing on TikTok, like, good for you. And maybe you're a millionaire now. Fantastic. Like you figured something out. But there's something about when we zoom out and we look at the collective path of truth.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're definitely taking the back alley route in this moment. Like shit is gnarly in there, even though it looks really beautiful on the outside. But we're all paying attention to the 21-year-olds who don't actually know what it means to walk the path of truth yet.
Right. Entirely true.
So I don't know where to
well, this is where it's an edge. It's like being somewhat, how do I, if I don't like that system, mm-hmm. how do I live in such a way that is not in approval of that system at all?
Right.
Which means I spend way less time on Instagram and way more time sitting still with my teachers who are elders, mm-hmm. and going off grid and having them perform magical transmissions of wisdom that I get to just absorb into my body, and compensating them for that, you know, becoming a part of a different way and a different system. And it's not sexy and it's not shiny and it's not the path to $100,000 a month, but it does feel like truth for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you feel your clients receive through, or what is the, you know, the journey that they go on as well when they're working with you? Because mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're talking so much about, okay, so we're not the type of coaches that are like, we guarantee that by the end of 6 months, you're going to make 100K a month. And it is such a different path. What is it that people are receiving?
I feel in general, when people come to me, they come because they sense that there is a different way to live. Their whole being is giving them indications that there's something different. They're like making life work, kind of, but in some way, shape, or form, feel trapped by their lives, like, or not fully expressed, or like something's not true, something's not in alignment. And so we go on a journey together of removing what's in the way of them hearing their true desire, not the things that have been plastered onto them. You're supposed to want this. You're supposed to want this. It's supposed to look like this. We peel those off one at a time, and we come back in again and again and again to the heart. Mm-hmm. And what is the heart saying? And to the soul, the mm-hmm. essence of who you are. When that quiet voice speaks to you, what does it say? Can we learn to listen? Can we dial up the volume on that? Because that is your true nature. And so when people are living more in alignment with their true nature, they're also remembering that we are nature. We're not separate from it. So you showing up in your true nature returns you to the flow of life. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're living a life that looks like it suits you. Your life fits you. You don't wake up in the morning going like, oh no, here we go again. This is heavy and hard and terrible. You wake up feeling guided and like you have a way in to feel for what's the next right move, because truth is always emergent. So I hope that my clients leave with this internal compass and a conviction and a courage to live a human life in a different way. Mm. Mm-hmm. That is not that, you know, that we are, most of my clients are very sensitive people. Mm. And so as highly sensitive beings, they're sensitive enough to feel that the systems of the world we live in right now are malfunctioning. They do not work for actual human thriving. So they're making themselves wrong for that. They're like, it must be me. Maybe I need to do a juice cleanse. You know, it must be me that's broken. And instead of kind of returning them to, no, you actually are feeling what's wrong. So how do you actually live your life in a way that breaks free from that which isn't working?
And the thing that I always think about is like, okay, so how is that better than 100K months?
Yeah.
You know, like I truly ask that for myself, for my clients, for my work. It's like, okay, there's a reason why I chose this. Because we all could have chosen the 100K months. I think we can all do that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not possible. But it doesn't, it actually doesn't feel as appealing. There's moments where you're like, well, that would be nice. But yeah, what is it that we're getting instead? Because we're saying no, at least temporarily. I don't think that it's impossible to do both. Mm-hmm. But right now we're rejecting the systems and mainly like the value system of like, okay, that's what I need to be working towards. Mm-hmm. And instead we're working towards, I'm just sort of thinking about it. Like,
I think one of the juiciest feelings in the world is alignment. And it doesn't sound that juicy, but when you feel everything click in and you are in a space where you realize there is not actually any difference between how I'm feeling on the inside and the choices I'm making in my life and how the world is experiencing me, to me, that's freedom. And that freedom actually means a lot more than I have financial freedom to the point where I'm not living in fear and I'm not like, it's like enough spaciousness, right, in the money realm, which I feel super grateful for. And, you know, like we've created that. That's so beautiful to have created that doing the work that we love. And would it be nice to have like even a little more spaciousness? Sure. But I wouldn't ever want to do that in a way that made me feel like I was not free or there was some place where I was like, I kind of have to squint at that decision I just made. I really just charged that person a ton of money that they can't afford. And is that going to put them into debt? Like I would feel out of alignment in that moment. And that would drag me down on an energetic and vibrational level. So it feels like to me, the feeling of waking up and feeling like I'm in alignment, I'm in integrity with who I am truly is like the ultimate freedom.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. For me, the word that came to mind was aliveness.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, I find myself, I went through this phase, I don't really have it that much anymore. Now it comes up just like every so often where I'm like, oh, I wish I was like those people who are just never ending content creators who like they'll be like at the beach and they're like, oh, I have this thought. And then they get on Instagram and talk about it. Or they're always creating stuff on like the weekends, which to me is like sacred, like no work time unless I'm launching something big. Like I do not do shit on the weekends.
Yeah, we don't work on the weekends in this house.
No. And also some of the weekdays, not so much either, but especially at least for me in this season. But the weekends have always been so sacred. Like if someone tells me try to coach a client on a Sunday, I'll be like, I would rather pay them $1,000 to go away. Like just no. And so the freedom for me of being in the moment, and I see so many people who are, I don't know if it takes away for them. Maybe for them that is the path of truth, but for me it isn't, where they just somehow are like in an experience, but they're already extracting like, how is this an Instagram story? Or how do I, let me take video for the next reel. And like, sometimes I'm jealous of that because I'm like, oh man, these people are so, you know, they're constantly creating. And also I just don't want to be at the beach thinking about like, will this look good in a reel? Like I'm just here enjoying the beach or enjoying the walk or enjoying the conversation. I'm notoriously bad at taking photos when I'm meeting people or hanging out with people. And yeah. And I think to me, actually, that's a really, I don't want to ever feel like I like that's something I need to be thinking about when it's like my time, it's my time to be alive.
Yeah.
Not to document I'm alive.
Yeah.
But to actually feel it.
Yeah. So it's, to me, that being present in each and every moment is like my prayer, you know? How do I appreciate this with my whole heart, bring the fullness of my gratitude to whatever's here right in front of me? And that's how I pray. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm pulling myself in several different directions because I'm not actually inhabiting the moment fully, then it just feels flat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I want to move us a little bit to the relationship realm. Mm-hmm. And this can be, well, we'll start with romantic and then, I mean, it's all relationships really. Because you're so good. You're such a relational being. You're like the focal point for our little community here in Boulder. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I've really learned coming, being here now, 6 months, is that Ginny is the focal point. And it makes sense because you're sort of like the creator of the network, the mycelium network of the Boulder humans. And also I think that there's some juicy things to talk about when it comes to Oh, choosing truth in our romantic relationships.
Yeah.
And sort of what, I mean, I know I'm in a phase right now where I have a very clear, what seems like at least a clear fork in the road as to what path I want to take, what are the important things in my life, and it's really not convenient at all. And I know that we all go through that in romantic relationship, in particular because as feminine beings, we often are so devoted to the we and so we're so invested in community, in the relationship, in building a family, right? Like that's just what the feminine being does. And we also have a lot of masculine energy that moves through us, and we're independent 40-year-olds who haven't, you know, done the typical get married, you know, settle down, have six babies. Well, maybe no one's having six babies anymore, but you know.
2.5.
And so we also have a very strong connection to the me. And it brings us up against some pretty intense edges of truth. Like, okay, how do we weave these two pieces, these two realities of the me and the we together? And we're devoted to both. And then sometimes we're hit, I don't know, we're just like hit with situations where we're like, what do I choose? I don't know.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I also feel that what's happening for both of us is that we're not connected just to the me in terms of these are my preferences. These are the demands I'm making of life. We're connected to the me as like I'm actually here on this planet to help. Mm. So it's in service of the bigger we. Like if I give up certain preferences, truths inside myself, desires – am I actually denying the world my gifts?
Wow, I love that. Okay, that's a really interesting frame.
Which is a new one for the feminine, right? Because mm-hmm. in the past, you and I have talked about this because we're both in partnerships that were sort of like, is this going to work? I love this human. He's epic. And also, is this going to work logistically and in the 3D realm? Because... in the past, the feminine, because so love-driven, because so prioritizing of the relational thing, would often collapse her preferences and her dreams and her gifts even in service, in trading for safety of the relationship with the masculine.
Yeah.
I come from a long line of women who have done that, who have said, okay, I could offer this brilliance, this magic to the world, or I could be this person's wife. And here's where he wants to live and how he wants it to be. And I get it, you know, like that's how it's been. But there's something in us that is like, no, no, no. Actually, the feminine, the energetic of the feminine is trying to rebalance what's happening on the planet. We are a part of that. We are little fractals of the energetic that's trying to help that happen, to support that rise. And so if we collapse our preferences and don't bring our gifts through, and then we're actually, it's like we just become small.
Mm. Mm. I'm just like sitting with all that because it's such a new frame around the feminine expanding, you know, some people say rising, some people are like, oh, rooting, mm-hmm. but just the feminine growing and taking up more space, I think, in our collective consciousness. And that's so true. I've just never thought about it. So you're just like blowing my mind right now because I'm like having a moment like, oh, yeah, I can see how, you know, the pattern I'm seeing is there are so many relationships where there's so much love, there's so much consciousness. There's so many beautiful and clear communication tools. Like we are set up with all the ingredients, right? And we're having a hard time. Like we keep trying to make the cake and it's like, it's just something's off. You know, it's not really fully working.
Yeah.
And and I look and I'm like, I don't get it. How did these, you know, our parents' generation and the generation before, like, how did they make it work when they didn't have nonviolent communication skills and they didn't have
polarity
and embodiment workshops and they didn't have any of the stuff? And yet they were together for 30 years, 40 years. And here we are, like, we're barely getting through two years before we hear about, or we are ourselves in a situation of, you know, now we consciously uncouple. Mm-hmm. We don't go, fuck you, and throw the guy's stuff out, you know, in a box. So it's so interesting because in a way we have more tools than ever, and yet we're finding it really hard to have these long-term partnerships. And I've just been very much in the inquiry of, like, what the fuck is this about? Because there is there's one theory I have is, like, well, okay, maybe the metric in which we are measuring relationship is incorrect, that maybe we think, oh, the longer it is, the better, the more successful, right? Like, somehow we – and that maybe we're just in an era in humanity where actually it needs to be smaller, shorter time frames. For whatever reason, right?
Just
for, like, our evolution.
Just like the smaller, shorter death cycles, like creation, maintenance,
Mother,
destruction.
God, yeah. This is just, it's like every day now there's a death cycle, like by lunchtime, you know? And then by dinner, you're like, I am reborn. And then you sleep and then you do it all over again. Jesus, it is so intense to be here at this moment on this planet. Sometimes I'm like, meh, I don't know what I did. Why did I make this choice? But so that was one metric. I was like, maybe it's just the metric is incorrect. And then my other thought is, like, okay, well, there's also two humans now who are – no one is really willing to sacrifice. No one is willing to budge.
In a way that's self-abandoning. That's the thing. It's like I feel both of us are very skillful at compromise. And both of us are constantly watching for – where does compromise cross into self-abandonment? And that to me is the new thing. It's like, how do we feel for that place?
Yeah. Because most men, I mean, obviously this is a generalization, but just based on, like, the way that the world was set up, right? Men didn't have to self-abandon as much because they were just like, I want to get this job. I want to do this thing. I want to live in this place. And because they had the money, they were the choice makers, really, in the unit of the family. And now it's not that anymore. Like, we are not making choices like our mothers or our grandmothers based on, like, where's the financial safety? Because the financial safety sometimes is more actually in the woman. The woman may be making more money. And so it's not really that relevant anymore. So now it's about, like you said, the collective. Like, okay, how do I live a life that's actually going to serve everyone more? And I don't know. I don't have, like, a clear prescription here because I'm in the inquiry myself, but it's like, oh, we're in a very unique time where a lot of people are choosing truth over longevity or convenience or financial security or safety or anything like that.
And it's because it actually starts to feel like not a choice. This is what I see in a lot of people that I work with. It's like they will come to me because they are wanting tools that will enable them to stay in their uncomfortable situation, which is often a relationship. And I generally tell them when they come to me, I cannot promise you that what will happen through us working together is that you will stay. What we will do is fan the flames of truth and go from there, you know? And that is, in general, if we're not doing that, it starts to show in the body. It presents as anxiety. It presents as insomnia. It presents as this, you know, nervous system dysfunction where everything is tight and you fly off the handle at a moment's notice. And it's because we're trying to stay somewhere that's not true. It's just interesting. I'm seeing it more and more. Like, okay, maybe the true thing is actually expanding and growing. And sometimes we outgrow another human instead of just, like, staying with them for years and years and years. I'm in the curiosity because I also think that the tendency is to not bring challenging things to one another, and that you and I are both in relationships that are growth containers that we have chosen into as this is a practice. I'm entering into partnership as a practice. And so we bring our dissatisfaction to our partners instead of just being like, well, this isn't going to work. It's like, can we expand together in this truth? And we, you know, ask them to do the same for us. And then that makes it just like this constant feeling for truth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting because on the one hand, so everyone's not self-abandoning, which is nice. Like, that's good. A plus to everyone in the formula. And what are we just in this weird, awkward in-between where not self-abandoning individually because we're also holding to something, a collective vision, like you were saying, is currently creating a lot of challenge in, like, union, uh-huh. And the maintenance of union, mm-hmm. Because I do think there's something so special about, like, my heart just knows, like, I want to grow old with someone. Like, mm-hmm. that's just something that feels like a key piece to living life. And it maybe not everyone else feels that way, but my desire is like, oh yeah, I want to grow old with someone. And I want to know, like, hey, 20, 30 years ago, we did this thing together, and like just have all these chapters, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm getting that with a lot of women.
Yeah.
Like, I'm now entering into like more than a decade with, you know, there's some of my friends from Lebanon, from high school, who like we've definitely lived different decades together. But having that really with like a romantic teammate, like that feels really important at the same time. But yeah, we're in this like crunchy, awkward in-between phase where it union is so important, but then also, yeah, I don't know, us taking care of ourselves and loving ourselves. And I always come back to the question with relationship is always like, how do I love myself and love you at the same time?
Yeah.
Like, it's just that. And yeah. every problem, every challenge, every obstacle is usually on some level when you strip it down to, you know, it's like, how do I love myself and love you? And is there a clash? And where is there a clash? Mm-hmm. And you brought in this beautiful other layer, which is like, how do we love the world?
Yeah.
So there's love me, love you, love the world. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Lots of loving mm-hmm. that needs to happen. Luckily, we have never-ending, infinite amounts of it.
And it is really cool to see how, I think when you just spoke to, are we in this awkward in-between phase? I do think we are. Mm. Because I can feel very clearly that in so many ways, the paradigm that humanity has been operating in is becoming irrelevant and needs some destruction. The binary, black and white, the, you know, extractive ways of being with the earth. Mm-hmm. In Western society in particular, the isolation that we're working through, the siloing off mm-hmm. of individual humans or small family units where they just become kind of like trauma cesspools.
Oh my God. Big
one. As opposed to what used to be true as we understand it, which was a much more broad, communal, spread out, tribally woven way of being. And in many of those cultures, the primary partnership between one man and one woman was not like revered in the way that it is in our current society. So it's like we're in this moment of realizing that so much needs to dissolve because it hasn't worked. We've like forced people to stay together who didn't actually want to stay together. We've created family units where if one parent is an addict or an alcoholic, like the children of that one family unit don't have other healthy adults yeah. to lean on or go to disperse that, to like give them some nurturance. And we're doing it all ourselves and all of these things that aren't working. And there is some future way, I believe, where we figure out a love-based, expansive way to human again. I have to hold that belief. Otherwise, I just go into apocalypse. But maybe it does take an apocalypse before we arrive on the other side. But I do think we're in this dissolution phase. And, you know, our teacher Javier used to laugh and say, like, it's the Kali Yuga. What do you expect? Which is, we are in a predicted age of destruction. And I think we're feeling our way in the dark to what is trying to emerge. And especially those of us who have chosen to be relational in a way that is deeply intentional and always feeling for truth, there is no path laid out before us. So we're having to just feel, it's like going down the stairs in the dark. You know, you just have to feel for the next step and then the next step.
And then you often trip.
And then you trip.
That's when you trip and you're like, oops.
Bang into the wall.
Okay.
But I think we're a part of that. We're a part of some transitionary phase in a lot of ways in humanity.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's maybe where some of the old trends that, I mean, they're current trends, but we feel they're old because they're sort of like the old paradigm, feel just misaligned, because we're all like, okay, in the dark going down the stairs, and they're over in the light still selling shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, something doesn't feel right. Although over there, it's nice and bright and I don't, you know, bruise my knee, but I don't feel this is where I'm supposed to be. I think that's the experience we have. We're just like, we could do it. It's just not where we're supposed to be.
A human that you and I both find very wise, Adrienne Marie Brown, wrote a beautiful book called Pleasure Activism, where she talks about, I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like, actually loving and relating as science fiction, meaning we are creating the world through what we dream into being. So it is this, like, we have this broad open slate in front of us, but like science fiction, it's like we have to create this, it has to occur to us as an idea, and we have to begin to live into this whole other world before that's even possible. So there are all these people over here doing it the old way. And then there are those of us who are like, I sense that something different is really true. And so it's listening and touching that truth and being willing to, without any guidance or clear path forward, choose it and see what happens, what gets dreamed into being.
And I think also often the science, what seems like science fiction or like futuristic or our imagination, is actually just a remembering and like a touching into like realities that already exist, whether we can see them with our eyes or not, you know, somewhere in the universe. So whether it's like, you know, things in nature that we don't think about often, like, you know, every time we walk on the earth, like, are we thinking about like the network of stuff underneath our feet? Like, there's so much shit going on there. Every time you're swimming in the ocean, and it's like the whole other situation that's happening down there is, we're not thinking about it that much, or we're not feeling into it that much. And so I actually think a lot of what we think is a new creation from our mind, quote unquote, science fiction, is just actually something that already exists somewhere, whether we know it or not, that we're now bringing back into our reality because we're reconnecting after being disconnected from nature. So it feels like it's just a nature thing, you know? Which brings me to the last thing that I want to touch on as we close, which is, you know, I hinted to it earlier, which is like you being the focal point of essentially our mycelium network here in Boulder. And not just here. I mean, locally there's one piece, but then there's also this network throughout the world, really. And I will say one thing that struck me and that's been so inspiring and appealing for me here in Boulder has been the way in which there is just the beginnings of a village in the modern day way in which we can be a village. So I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's sort of like the hippie communes and the, like, lately since COVID, there's been all the like, everyone's going to buy land and let's all live together in Costa Rica or like some other place in Texas or I don't know where. And I think all of those are beautiful models and may fit for some people. But I've always found like, okay, people are sort of oscillating because they want the privacy of like a small home and not necessarily having to manage the feelings of like 25 people who live on the land. And at the same time, we've seen, like you were saying, the isolation of like the nuclear family is a big reason why we have so much mental health issues, so many developmental issues in the children, because they don't have the healthy aunts, biological or not, right? But like the aunts and uncles who are just there babysitting every so often and modeling a different way of doing things. And so I'm curious what your thoughts are, and if you can like speak to it a little bit, just this model that we have here that wasn't conscious, like no one sat down and decided, okay, so we're going to do the village, but we're going to do it in this, you know, 21st century way, mm-hmm. where everyone still sort of lives in separate places, but there is a lot of weaving of our realities on a day-to-day basis.
I love this. I think a big part of what I'm here to do is understand and reweave community in a way that makes it look appealing and not crazy. Because fair. I am such a relational being. And okay, so I had this whole thought process, and I want to just see what you think about this, but I got really curious about those thinking the other day. So I do think that one advantage of not being constantly woven all together with a million people is that some of us have actually been allowed to develop our sensitivity, like the sensitivity of our individual systems. So when I look at like, why would life have done that? Why would life have separated us out from one another and had us live in this sort of siloed off way? And I think about how many of my friends are just wildly sensitive beings with so much intelligence and so much receiving so much sensory information all the time, and having learned how to develop tools that help them maximize that and not make it a liability, but rather a superpower. Like, oh, wow, I can feel so much. I don't have to turn that off because I'm around a bazillion other people. I don't know. I'm curious. I'm just trying this on. So we've been able to develop our sensitivity. Now the question becomes, as these highly sensitive individuals who basically have learned to survive through having a lot of preferences, you know, like I need to have it be this temperature and I need to do 3 hours of silent practice every morning and I need to have it completely silent when I'm working and I need to spend, you know, this much time in this way, all these things, how do we honor those sensitivities, but not let them be barriers? Like begin to relate to ourselves as like, okay, yes, you're super sensitive. And we actually now from this place of sensitivity need to reaccustom our nervous systems to being together. Mm-hmm. And so I think the way is that we inch into that. And that's kind of what we're doing here in community. All of our friends and those that we are doing life with here in Boulder are very sensitive beings and also highly relational beings. And also no one misses anything. So there's a lot of sight. And so it's like a being, it's the coming up to that edge constantly of being willing to be seen and like, but then trusting that there's love. And over time, we just keep building that. And we are loving and honoring of one another's preferences, but also let each other know like, hey, maybe you could chill out on that one a little bit.
Like, oh my God, we've had moments like that for sure.
And if we're going to actually do community, you can't be just, I'm in flow and I'm going to bail at the last minute on this thing I told you I was going to do because it's not in my desire in this moment. Like, no, we can't do that. You actually have to learn to show up when we say we're going to show up and to show up sometimes when we don't want to, when it's like, I'm tired, but you're like, yeah, but your friend has COVID. Go take her some soup, you know? And so I think that's working that edge of how do we honor our sensitivity, honor that which we've developed in ourselves, which are our skills and gifts that we bring. All of our friends are also like savage medicine women, essentially, you know, who are here to see and penetrate and help and heal and guide and da da da. And how do we be symbiotic with one another? in this way that feels truly nourishing and is going to bump up against edges.
Yeah. Yeah. It just makes me think that actually it's the same exact mechanism as being in a romantic container. So we always, you know, talk about how like actually relationship, romantic relationship is the deepest growth container, right? Because you cannot squirm away from the mirror that is your partner. And I think in community, it's like times 100 because you have every single person is a mirror. So in at least in this version of community here, which I don't often see in that many places right now in the Western world, you really can't hide. You can't hide. Everyone knows what's going on. I mean, the flip side of that is you have never, like you have so much support. I've never felt more supported, but I've also never felt more seen, which sometimes can feel really uncomfortable when I just want to hide and not, you know, answer questions about, you know, things and just be in my process. But it's exactly like romantic relationship. Like your partner is going to be like, hey, something's up with you. What's the deal, yo? And you're like, you can't just run away. Mm-hmm. At some point you have to address it. And I think that somehow we've managed to, even in the personal development world, in the coaching world, in this healing collective bubble that we're in, we still have a way in which we hide so much of this. There's actually a rampant, I would say, epidemic of this, of like people hiding their darker, shadowy shit behind their closed door. Because a lot of them, are, you know, you see a lot of these, the coaches that are making $1 million a year or whatever, but they live alone, you know, so there's no one there to call them out on their shit.
Right.
And I want to invite them into community. Come, you know, because you'll receive so much love and so much support and so many giggles and so much fun. And also now you get to really look at your shit, because there is, there's just something happening that is allowing us to get away with hiding in our own homes. And then again, still just posting the filtered version.
Yes.
Online, you know, and hiring designers and social media managers to make it look pretty. And it's not conscious. Like I'm not faulting anyone on that. It's just sort of how it's the norm. Mm-hmm. And so I think actually this village model is quite revolutionary in that sense, because we are really seeing each other's shit.
And that is what actually serves, because no matter what we're teaching, there is nothing more potent to shift the world than your embodied transmission. Doesn't matter what you talk about. Nadia and I will talk about this all the time. We could be in an embodied experience of anguish and then have a client call to show up for, go in, coach that client and be like, oh, I'm all better, because we actually do love our work. And when we're in our work, we're not actually just us. We're connected to the life force, the channel of universal flow that helps us hold and support. But that's not actually just me, Ginny, as a human. And so if I'm only showing up and like talking from that place, my embodied transmission walking through the world as an actual human, not on Zoom and not in the coaching role, may be really murky and mucky and full of kind of unprocessed, not super healthy stuff. But when you have this mirror of community held up to you and you're like, oh my God, I'm really gonna, like, okay, this person's like, you know, you're doing this thing. And you're like,
damn it.
But then you actually look at it.
Yeah.
And because this person's bringing you that thing with love, you start to clean it up. It's like it's pressure washing you. That's how I feel about both romantic relationship that's healthy and full of sight and community that's healthy and full of sight, is it's actually like this hose pressure washing out the mucky corners, so that then as you walk through the world, just as you be, you are transmitting something that's felt in this field that connects all of us. Mm-hmm. And that actually creates evolution on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not just talking about this stuff, but doing it, embodying it, and moving as it.
Truth. Hashtag truth. All right. Beautiful conversation.
So
Thank
fun.
You so much. Okay, guys, to check out Ginny's work, there's going to be all the links in the show notes, but she has some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful writing, things that are already on her Instagram and things that will soon be published. And your handle is?
Just my name, Ginny Muir.
Ginny Muir. So all of that, yeah, again, is in the show notes. But definitely go follow her and stay up to date with what she's offering in the world, because she's an amazing medicine woman and coach. I've hired her even as friends, like after years of being friends. I'm like, okay, listen, I need a coach. So yeah, she's absolutely profoundly potent and powerful if you want to walk that path of truth. So thanks again.
Thanks, Nadia. It's so fun.
If this episode juiced you up, turned you on, and got you interested in private coaching with me, head on over to nadiamunla.com. The Work With Me page outlines everything. The time containers, the price points, who I work with, and so on and so forth. And if you still have questions after that, you can email us at info@nadiamunla.com to inquire about applications or anything else that was not answered on the page. And then when I receive your application, if I feel like we're a fit, we always hop on an exploration call before we commit to anything. And this to me is like going on a date, going on a coaching date. And we do that in order to really confirm that this is a relationship we both want to enter into for a period of time. We get clear on what it is that I can support you with, whether I am the best person to support you, and how we will do so. So if this is you, I can't wait to get your application and hop on the phone with you soon. If you enjoyed the guest on this episode, you can head on over to the show notes to get more info on their bio, their work, their website, and all the good stuff. I love you guys so much. Thank you for listening. We would love for you to rate and review the show, and I'd love to know your takeaways from the episode. You can do that by DMing me on Instagram @NadiaMunla.